In association with Newsarama.com, welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Unlike many superpowered TV shows that miss the mark and end in a season or less, NBC's Heroes has become a bona fide hit and is guaranteed to return next season. As season one wraps up, we speak to co-executive producer Jesse Alexander, who wrote the penultimate May 14th episode and shares his thoughts on the series' future. Plus, we'll talk about his work as a writer-producer on Lost and Alias, his long association with creator J.J. Abrams, and his friendship with Jeff Loeb. Word Balloon is brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. If you liked them before, check them out today. They've got all new 75% discounts on your pre-ordered new releases and more 50% discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. Every month you'll enjoy standard discounts of 38% on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers. They've added double the specials with discounts of 50% and more. That's right, twice as many DC, Image, and Marvel monthly specials. For all the details, go to mailordercomics.com. A few notes about this interview. Jesse refers to a big announcement which came Monday, May 14th, hours before his episode of Heroes aired. Next season, Heroes will be back for 22 episodes. Plus, there'll be an 8-episode spin-off series called Heroes Origins, which will introduce new characters each week and set up a potential story for the main show's third season. Jesse couldn't divulge the news before the announcement, so that's the big story that he keeps referring to. There's also a section of the interview where, in his relaxed state, Jesse started to reveal some secrets about the second season, which he asked me to take out of the episode. So, sorry, spoiler fans. Our conversation begins with a little talk about Eight-Legged Freaks, the sci-fi parody monster film that Jesse wrote a couple years ago.
No lie, man. I loved Alias. And,
I'm so glad.
Absolutely, man. I have to admit, I did not see Eight-Legged Freaks.
Oh, what?
I know. Shame on me. Sorry.
Dude, it's a giant spider movie.
You know, that's the weird thing. I'm not really a monster guy.
Yeah, but that's really?
Yeah, I'm more of the sci-fi, you know, heroes kind of adventure and mystery kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
And that's
it's more because I actually hate horror movies.
Okay.
They're too scary. So Eight-Legged Freaks is actually all about fun and adventure and silliness because I just can't handle being scared.
No, and I promise I will seek it out.
It was huge in Thailand.
I thought it did for a giant spider. It should cover a lot of ground. No, it seemed like it. I mean, working in radio, I was aware of the radio national campaign because you guys kind of tied into Spider-Man, too. And
yeah.
There was like, you know.
You know what? It's a fun movie. There's a lot of things about it that I'm really proud of. And, you know, I'm so glad I did a movie like that because I have two, you know, young boys. And I think it'll be a movie that we have fun watching together. And, you know, it was an amazing experience. And I got to meet, you know, a couple of my heroes, Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin, and become friends with those guys. And
very cool.
It was a great experience.
Yeah, those guys are huge.
They're awesome.
Popcorn producers, absolutely.
The greatest. And, you know, they're such good guys. And, you know, today is a really special day because we won a Saturn Award last night.
Oh, that's great, man. Congratulations.
Best drama for Heroes. And, it's really the only award that I care about. Because I just, as a kid, I watched, you know, the Saturn Awards when they were on TV, and they had William Shatner singing Rocket Man, and I just have been obsessed, and, you know, we won one at Alias, and I got one at Lost, and now to get one at Heroes is just the greatest thing ever.
That's great. Wow. Because, you know, Chicago didn't get the Saturn Awards back then, so we didn't get to watch
that. Yeah, I'm sure it was just local, like KTLA Channel 5.
Okay.
You know, which broadcast them, and it was kind of their peak for the Saturn Awards back in, like, 78 or something like that.
That's really cool. But, and everybody was there, obviously, like Ellison and, you know, Asimov
and
everybody.
And it's still, you know, such a, you know, a great thing for the L.A. crowd and for the genre crowd. You know, when we were there for Alias, Spielberg was there getting an award. And, Sid and Marty Krofft got a Lifetime Achievement Award. And last night was pretty great. They gave a special award to Kerry O'Quinn, who created Starlog and Fangoria.
Yeah.
I think, one of the Cinemagic magazines, I think.
Okay, I love Starlog. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, Fangoria. I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you, much like Spielberg, had a beginning of making 8mm movies with your Star Wars figures?
Absolutely. That's how I got into the business, and that is how I still approach the business, is just kind of making movies with my friends and having a good time because, you know, I was, you know, not a jock at all and was a geek. And, you know, my dad had a Super 8 camera and, you know, we had a big backyard and I just made movies with my buddies after school every day. And it was just what we did. It was our fun, our playtime. And it, you know, just has always been the thing I wanted to do, was to end up, you know, exactly where I am right now. You know, just blocks away from Hollywood Boulevard working on a superhero TV show is just insanity.
That's cool.
That actually worked out for me. I can't believe it.
What were your favorite shows as a kid? I'm sure other than the, you know, garden variety, like Star Wars and Star Trek and stuff. But
all that stuff I was super into. And, you know, I got to say, I love Wild Wild West.
Sure.
That was like my favorite thing ever. Nothing was better than having a veal parmesan, a TV dinner, and sitting in front of Wild Wild West. That was like the greatest thing, you know, as a kid. And I loved the Adam West Batman series, which did not understand was supposed to be campy.
I
took it very seriously. that was the greatest. And, you know, Get Smart, of course, I took quite seriously as well. You know, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, they had all the Star Wars copies with, like, Galactica and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I never could understand why people said it was a Star Wars ripoff. I was like, but it's so different. It's fantastic. And Buck Rogers I love.
Sure.
You know, I sent fan letters to Gil Gerard and got autographs on from all that. Yeah.
Absolutely. No, I loved Buck Rogers. All that Glenn Larson stuff was,
it was the best. But, you know, Baba Black Sheep.
Sure.
You know, whenever we have, like, budget issues on the show, I'm like, didn't you guys ever see, like, Baba Black Sheep? They flew fighter planes all around. Why don't we just go out to Indian Dunes and drive around in Jeeps or something?
You got to get Robert Conrad for Heroes, man.
It'd be awesome. That guy was incredible.
Absolutely. And it's great because he's like 5'4 or whatever. He's like the tiniest action hero ever, but
that's
like
a good idea, actually,
totally badass.
We were chatting about, you know, we have, you know, something very special happening with the Heroes franchise that I can't really give up, but it's something that people will probably know about by the time they hear this. And if something like that happens, you know, it would be amazing to be able to get some special people involved, like, you know, the William Shatners of the world and the Robert Conrads and, you know, those amazing, you know, kind of character actors out there that we all love and are all capable of so much more than they were offered very often.
Well, I'm glad that you have given new life to Eric Roberts. And I
mean,
I didn't dislike the Best of the Best films, but I'm really happy.
Right.
Really happy that he's back.
Incredible. That guy was amazing, and it was one of those things, too, where at the beginning we're all like, Eric Roberts? We're getting Eric Roberts to do the show? And he came on, and he just crushed it. He was perfect as Thompson, and I don't know when this is going on the air, but
hopefully next week. So, yeah, I don't wanna...
he gets smoked on an episode that I wrote, episode 22.
Is that going to be Monday?
Okay. Yeah, Monday night.
All right, I promise this will air after that,
he
so that's too bad.
Away.
Oh, that's too bad.
He was terrific.
That's great. And, of course, George Takei.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, once again proven, yeah, Sulu, whatever. You know, the man's awesome. And he, much like Shatner, has his own kind of interesting gravitas when he comes on the stage.
He's amazing. And people are going to be blown away by episode 22.
Cool.
You know, this episode I wrote where, you know, I apologize for giving away spoilers if you watch the show, but
I don't mind. It's okay because let's stay as up to date as we can.
Yeah, Hero and his dad, you know, meet up again in episode 22, and his father teaches him how to fight with a samurai sword. So we had Masioka and George Takei sword fighting.
That's awesome.
With samurai swords, and it was amazing, and they both were incredible, and we're like, okay, George is probably going to be able to do, like, one move and then pass out, and we're going to use his stunt double for the rest of the day. But he was amazing.
That's
cool. He had
cool.
so much stamina, and he remembered all his moves, and he just nailed it. And I think, you know, I'm incredibly proud of this episode that's on Monday night. I think it's one of our best episodes. And having those two guys together, having this samurai fight is a dream come true.
I talked to Jeff, and I understand why you guys needed to take that break from a production standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to say, ever since you guys have come back, it has been boom, 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 nothing but action.
Exactly.
It's great to see everybody kind of together now. And, you know, looking forward to the cliffhanger, which I imagine will have some resolution.
Which cliffhanger? The end of the season?
Yeah.
Oh, it has total resolution, and it just has one beat at the end that, you know, suggests the story for next year, because I feel very strong, you know, having worked on, all I've worked on have been serialized shows, and Alias, you know, was, you know, whether or not it really is, I like to think that it was one of the first serialized shows to continue to build on its mythology. 24 is amazing what they do, but mm-hmm. they kind of are repetitive and closed-ended and don't really expand the world in a way that we did at Alias. And the way we did it at Alias was very often not the way to do it. And we would just keep building and building and building upon stuff and then have to explain everything. And so by, you know, season three, the beginning of every act one was two characters standing in front of each other explaining who they were and
exposition,
who they were related
yeah.
to and what company they used to work for and what their mission was and all this garbage. So we felt very strongly here that, like, no, let's wrap up a story at the end of season one so it'll feel like a cohesive piece that people will always be able to enjoy that season one experience. And then people, when they come on to season two, it can be a whole new story in the way that 24 is, I think, done very well.
I'm glad you said that about Alias because I wanted to get into that in terms of revealing things and keeping things, because Lost was another example of show that I know one that you helped put on its feet as well.
Yep.
So, you know, Jeff said that it's like every 3 weeks or so you guys reveal something so that, you know.
Absolutely. And that, again, is just, you know, a lesson. It was one of the things we were, you know, we wanted to do on Lost, but, you know, Lost has been a very challenging experience creatively, you know, for Damon Lindelof, who's a genius and is such an amazing storyteller. And, you know, I think now that they have been told that they can end the show at a certain point, you know, it was just announced that the show will be on for 3 more years, mm-hmm. 16 episodes a year. That's something that Damon has been fighting for since the very beginning of the show, knowing that there was going to be an end to it, so that there could be more reveals. Because the premise of Lost is so contained. These people are on an island. The only real big question of the show is, where are we?
Right.
And to just kind of keep dragging out that one question is very, very challenging. So I know they're all energized over there, and Damon's incredibly excited about the way they can really approach stories and start taking advantage of all the, you know, main tent poles that we thought about when we, you know, created the show several years ago. But it's been a difficult creative journey for them, and certainly for a network, a show like Lost is their worst nightmare. It's a serialized show. It's a genre show. Neither of those things are things that executives like, watch, are familiar with. You know, the executives are the people who threw milk cartons at the guys who create shows like that in the hallway at high school. Like, it's their worst nightmare. They want to be on the legal show where they can say, I didn't understand where you found the bloody glove. It's not about, like, well, Sawyer's motivated by his love for this person, and it's because he was. That is just a disaster for them.
Is it getting better, though? I mean, are the execs seeing things? Because it's funny, I even before Heroes, when Jeff was still on Lost in my first conversation with him, I'm like, wow, all of a sudden, because of the success of Lost, and maybe because of the success of Alias, at least in terms of it being a cult show that had its core following, mm-hmm. it seemed like you had Invasion, you had
Surface. Well, that's the thing.
Surface.
They all kind of tried to do it, but a lot of those shows were being, you know, were kind of done for the wrong reasons. They were like, oh my God, Lost is successful, let's do that. And they didn't exactly look at the reasons that Lost was successful, and then they didn't really analyze the reasons that it wasn't working in a lot of ways, and they were really kind of emulating it from, I think, a more cynical place. You know, I think a lot of the creators who have been involved in those shows are amazing, you know, creative talents, like Sean Cassidy on Invasion has done incredible work. And but I just know that the executive regimes have a tremendous difficulty with allowing a serialized genre show to be a serialized genre show.
Okay.
They're always trying to fit it back in a box that they can understand. Like, you know, they are very much of the opinion that TV shows don't change, that you put on a show with its characters and you do the same thing every week, and
sure.
everything stays exactly the same every week, and that's why people keep coming back, because it is something that they're familiar with and that they understand. And, you know, they also know the realities of it's very challenging for audiences to jump onto a serialized show midstream, which is true, and so they are very often restrictive of the creative talents behind those shows. But that was something that we encountered early on at Heroes, But we, you know, stuck to our guns and made it clear that we had a plan of what we wanted to do, and that, you know, we responded to, you know, the executives' questions. And then as soon as we were on the air, they kind of realized, well, these guys must know what they're talking about, so let's just let them run with it.
Have the ratings increased? Have things like replaying
episodes? The show did incredibly well, like so far beyond what I imagined. You know, I thought, okay, well, we'll build, we'll hit a plateau, you know.
Sure.
We'll build, and then we'll start dropping, and then we'll hit a plateau, and that's where we'll end up. And the way the show kept building was something that kind of blew me away. I never imagined that, you know, that we would be as successful as we were. And then, of course, we did the thing where we went off the air at a very critical time. And we went off the air for a long time.
You bet.
And when we came back, we were, you know, 3 million plus viewers weren't there anymore. You know, some people thought the show was over. Some people, you know, didn't know we were back on. Some people, you know, were watching, you know, Dancing with, you know, My Mother, whatever those shows are. And also at that point, if you've missed it, then you're like, well, just wait for the DVDs. So it was an unfortunate time for us to have a break, you know, going into our last five episodes, and it's a mistake we won't repeat next year. We have, you know, really bold ideas about airing consecutive episodes, and then, you know, this new big idea that will be announced, you know, next week.
Okay.
That, you know, that we're all very excited about. So I think that'll help us, you know, grab our audience and keep them for, you know, for the duration of a season.
When is the announcement next week, do you know?
At the Upfronts on Tuesday.
Okay.
So, or actually it's on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you, I mean, I promise I wouldn't release it, but if you can't
say it,
I
respect
that.
I'm nervous
that.
About saying anything
it's
because,
cool,
as we all know, the Upfronts, they can change their mind at the last second.
Okay, man.
Like Zucker's about to say something and he's like, no, I'm not going to do it. So you never know, and I'm
cool.
Happy to have a follow-up if you want to.
Okay, that'd be
maybe
great.
Jeff and I can do a joint follow-up with you.
That'd be awesome.
After Love that, after if, we see what they actually say.
If Tim's available, that'd be great, too.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so I know you have a long relation with J.J. Abrams.
Yep.
And,
yeah.
And why don't you talk about that and how that started?
Well, J.J. and I went to college together. We went to a very small liberal arts college that was filled with primarily women, which was the greatest thing ever, and called Sarah Lawrence outside of New York.
You bet.
And J.J. was graduating, and I was, I guess, a junior or something, and we just hit it off and became great friends. And with our love of movies and our love of making movies, you know, J.J. and I are of that same mold where it's really all about being creative. And he used to make Super 8 films as well, and it just was our process. It was our playtime. You know, so we wrote scripts together in school and after school, and have just been great friends for a long time. And you know, it was tremendous to be able to get to, you know, be with JJ, be his friend through his rise. You know, from getting out of school to selling his first scripts and making his first movies, and you know, I've just been in such an incredible place to learn about the business and learn about writing and learn about how you treat people in the business. And you know, JJ's just been an incredible friend and a tremendous role model for me.
So did Alias, you know, did he start with Alias and said, hey, come on this
show? Yeah, that was the thing, is that, you know, for years, JJ and I would take our laptops, you know, and go write together. I'd be working on my stuff, he'd be working on his stuff, and we would just, you know, kind of be each other's silent writing partners and just, as you know, sit there and work on pages all day and just help each other out. And then when he finally started doing Alias, which was a show that I was, you know, was definitely in my wheelhouse, he was working on the pilot, and you know, we were just sitting across the table talking about it, and he said, if this thing goes, you want to jump on board? And I was totally up for it. I, you know, was at the place where I'd been writing you know, unproduced movies for, you know, like 7 years, and been making a fortune doing it, been working with incredible people. But, you know, the feature business is just brutal as far as writing and actually getting something made, and TV is the opposite.
And genre fans would be really disappointed to learn that among those unproduced scripts that you made were for, like, Jason and the Argonauts and Flash Gordon.
Absolutely. You know, my niche really was writing these big genre movies. The first, the first thing I wrote was a big Flash Gordon movie that I wrote for Peter Guber at Sony that almost got made, and it was an incredible experience writing that movie. And you know, I wrote a couple other genre things for them, and you know, I wrote something very similar to Small Soldiers, and you know,
oh, wow.
It almost got made, but of course didn't because of Small Soldiers, and you know, adapted the Fred Saberhagen Berserker books. I wrote like a Guns of Navarone in Space version of Berserker for Alex Proyas, which was going to be the greatest thing
wow.
ever. You know, and of course, you know, we did that, and it was, everybody loved the script, and New Line said, oh, we're spending all our money on these Lord of the Rings movies, so that one's not going to happen.
That's too bad.
Yeah, modern-day Jason and the Argonauts I wrote for DreamWorks and adapted some video games for, you know, for Fox, and God, it's ridiculous when I think about all the stuff I've done, and I can't believe I'm at the point where I actually forget things I've done.
Well, and I noticed, too, and I'm looking at your interview on the9thwonder.com that you did a sequence in Barbed Wire.
Exactly. That was the first producing I ever had. I had worked as an assistant for a producer at Dark Horse Entertainment, and they'd made the movie and then were looking to spice up the beginning, and, you know, they just brought me in a room, and I pitched out something crazy, and they let me write it. You know, I've always been a hardcore video gamer. I just love video games. And, you know, I wrote some video games. I wrote something for Bruce Willis called Apocalypse. And, you know, gaming is something that that I certainly incorporate into all my writing in terms of, you know, my set pieces and, you know, dramatic questions and puzzles and all that sort of stuff is, you know, things that I've picked up in the gaming world. So it's always been very easy for me to crank out a set piece, which is, you know, one of the reasons I stayed on Alias for 5 years writing those set pieces.
Well, and how did you and Jeff get together?
Loeb?
Yeah.
It's fantastic because I had been a Jeff Loeb fan for years because I'm, you know, obviously because I listen to WordBalloon.com, I love comics. And because I love comics, I love Jeff Loeb.
Here.
And, you know, we hired Paul Dini to be on Lost the first season, and then, you know, we talked about Jeff, you know, going on to that show, and I never even met Jeff because I went back to Alias and Lost was in its second year when Jeff was there, and then Jeff and I just met when we hooked up over here at Heroes.
Oh, that's cool.
And just, you know, clicked immediately. It was one of those things where, obviously, if you go up to somebody and you start complimenting them, they're going to, you know, be your friend pretty quickly. So I just went up to him and was like, oh, my God, I love Challengers of the Unknown. It's like my favorite book. Oh, that was my first book. And we just hit it off immediately. And we've, you know, become like the Lone Ranger and Tonto over here. Although I don't know which is.
Who's who?
Who's who. But
Butch and Sundance. There you go.
There you go. Perfect. That's it.
Are you ever interested in doing comic book work?
I would love to, and it's something that, you know, I've wanted to do. I'm friendly with Dan Brereton, whose work I love, and we talked about doing a Batman thing for Mike Carlin at some point, but my schedule just didn't really permit it.
Okay.
You know, we had this great story that we were going to do, and luckily I've been able to dip my foot in the water by doing some of these online comics that we have at Heroes, and I got incredibly lucky to have Michael Gatos illustrate one of the comics that I did.
He's awesome.
Which is just, you know, the bomb. I can't
you
even
bet.
Believe it. The book is outrageous. And I recommend that everybody go check out, you know, the online Heroes comics that we've done. They've been very challenging to find because the NBC.com homepage for Heroes is kind of a disaster. And they're, like, listed under graphic novels. But, you know, we've done, like, a five-page hero story for every episode and more so. And we've been using a lot of amazing comic book people to do the art. And we've been generating the stories in-house.
And the stories are kind of keying people in better to the series. Because, like, Uplink made her debut in the comic.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Early on.
You know, and I'm obsessed with transmedia storytelling and, you know, layering stories. So we tell something on the show, and then we do another version of it in the comic, and there's another version of it online. So people who are like me, who are those hardcore fans, can find so many different ways to enjoy the story. And so we created this character of Wireless, who is a hero who has the power to hear the internet and to send out signals onto the internet. And we created her specifically to exist both on the show and in that online digital space and in the comics, you know, and there's a big event that's going to culminate with that character at the end of the year online.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, that, you know, it's one of those cool things that people who watch the show will have no idea that there was this other component to it. People who have been experiencing the show online, I think, will be excited and blown away by what we do.
Well, and I agree with you. I think the integration of all these different platforms to tell the story only enhances the fans' experience of really enjoying it. And I've talked to other shows and people from shows like Eureka and Battlestar Galactica who are doing things like webisodes. And certainly on Lost, you guys had the Hurley finding the camcorder
some, you know,
and stuff.
Rudimentary stuff like this on Alias where we were really kind of experimenting with it. It was me and JJ and Rick Orsi and a couple other guys, and we just, you know, created web pages on our own and got some, you know, phone message boxes and, you know, took some secret JPEGs and did, you know, our little own alternate reality game with that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Did you work on the Alias game too?
I did, yeah, with the Alias video game.
Yes.
I did, and it was, you know, because I'm such a core gamer, in the first meeting that we had, you know, with the guys from Acclaim, I'm like, okay, every licensed game you've ever made has sucked. I can't even believe we're doing a deal with you guys. Please tell me this is not going to be a bad game. It's not. And, of course, it was.
Oh, that's too bad, man.
From a story point of view, you know, we poured our hearts into doing a story that we thought was awesome. I think the execution of the game, you know, was challenged, you know, primarily by the circumstance. And I know there were a lot of people involved with the game who had their hearts in the right place. But, you know, very often with, you know, licensed property in the gaming world, it's quite challenging. And, you know, taking that experience and applying it to Heroes, I'm very active in, you know, I don't think any announcements have been made, but if we were hypothetically potentially to be doing a Heroes video game, it would be something I would be very involved in.
Very cool.
And to the point where we created certain storylines this year that would translate very well to the gaming space.
That's great.
Yeah.
The are you on the DVD commentaries for Alias?
I am on the DVD commentaries.
Which seasons are you on, man? Because I know you were the showrunner, am I correct?
At the end, Jeff Pinkner and I ran the show Year 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you sound disappointed. I thought Year 5 kind of got everything back on track, man. And actually,
really?
I thought 4 did too.
It did. You know what? It was challenging, but again, we were still learning so many things about serialized storytelling and like everything I learned at Alias and Lost, you know, the things to do and the things not to do, we've been applying here, and I'm so excited and happy that the show's taking off. And, you know, any contribution I can make to the success of this show with that experience, I'm really proud of. And, you know, Year 5, Sydney was pregnant. And,
which is tough,
and
yeah.
It was a disaster. And, like, we kept saying, well, maybe Sydney should stay home and, you know, she could be working in the, you know, back at the command center, sending
right.
people on missions. And, no, we want Sydney in the field. So, Jesus, the pregnant woman is on the B-2 stealth bomber, like climbing up into a 747 that's got a nuclear bomb on it and having a shootout. It's like, you know, suspension of disbelief, like, is a little challenging to hang on to in that kind of scenario.
And thankfully, the Super Bowl episode wasn't while she was pregnant
in
the lingerie, too.
That's
Whoa!
True.
I don't know if the Russian would have been happy about that.
That's true. Absolutely. That was, you know, Alias was really fun. JJ is a super fun guy to work with because he is pathologically creative. Like, he just wants to make stuff that he's excited about and wants to be creative with the people around him. So Alias was always up for doing something, you know, nuts. And, you know, I'm proud of a lot of the things that we did there, and I'm so thankful that fans care about that show in the way they do, and I hope they feel that, you know, we paid off that whole epic story in a way that they can feel, you know, that Sydney got some joy in the end of it all.
Yeah, I liked the wrap up. Obviously, I think I'm blanking on her name right now, Irina Derevko. Who was the mom?
Lena Olin.
Yeah, I know that must have, like, thrown a serious monkey wrench in what you guys were trying to do.
Yeah, totally. She, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, we hear one version of the story. There probably are a million other versions of the story. You know, we really wanted her to come back, and she, you know, had other things to do. You know, I'm like, wait a minute, you couldn't get arrested until we put you on this show, and now you're leaving? You know, and then
I was always
back,
a fan, but okay.
It cost a fortune, and we could only have her for a certain time, and you know, we just felt we had to bring her back to get some closure on the story.
Sure.
You know, we always had, that's the thing about Alias, we had, We had some temples about where we were going, but, you know, we were really kind of just charging through the, you know, dark highway with the headlights on and didn't really, you know, have the high beams on. You didn't, never quite knew where we were headed exactly. But I think we managed to tell a narrative that feels relatively cohesive, and sometimes we, you know, we got off track and had to explain things in a crazy way, but...
I liked some of the detours, man. I really liked when... And I'm blanking again. The Canadian filmmaker.
Oh my God, Paul Ver. No. What the hell's his name, dude?
History of Violence. Yeah.
Existenz guy.
And yes, Existenz. Yes.
What the hell's that guy?
Scanners, of course. Oh God, we
can't
suck.
Remember, he's like JJ's hero, Cronenberg.
Yes, thank you, David Cronenberg.
Yeah, that was awesome. And that again is because JJ's like, oh, I love Cronenberg. Let's get him over here.
Well, it was great. It was great casting, and it's fine. It's like, well, you had to kind of explain something. So good, go on that kind of detour.
Yeah, it was cool. And you know, Tarantino came and, you know, did a shot on
great two-parter,
Elias, who was
awesome
and such a fun guy to work with, and just super cool. And you know, we always
Moore.
What's that?
Roger Moore.
That was ridiculous.
It was.
I can't believe that happened. I can't even believe this freaking Roger Moore was on Alias.
No, it was. That's the thing, man. And thankfully, I was a little scared as the extended family of everyone, like so-and-so, it's another spy in the family.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, when a grandmother shows up, then I'm going to have to, like, get angry and throw something at the TV. But it luckily, that never happened.
Yeah, I'm sure not for lack of trying. you know, we really were just, you know, we had a very, you know, cohesive idea about what Sydney's experience would be emotionally and what her journey with her father would be and her mother. And as far as plot details, you know, we were just, you know, making it up. And, you know, one thing I was just telling somebody the other day, I think that, like, we were so bad to our guest stars. Like, we would get the greatest guest stars and then use them so poorly and, like, cut all their scenes down, like, you know, Christian Slater. We had Vivica Fox on the show.
Ricky Gervais.
He was awesome. That actually was one time that worked out well.
It sure did.
Ricky, who was amazing. And, you know, he and JJ had just hit it off, you know, via email. And we brought him, you know, asked him if he wanted to do it. And he came on. And he was amazing. He was, you know, did great scenes with Greg Grunberg, and Ricky was such an awesome guy. We were actually just trying to get him on Heroes, but I don't think his schedule's gonna allow it.
You know, it's funny. I just saw him on a new episode of Doctor Who, and I'm always wondering if these are, like, by design, things that will pop up in, like, the next season of Extras, or if I already missed the episode that, you know, because it's like all of a sudden in the background there's Ricky Gervais just literally being an extra, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I want to mention about Alias, and I appreciate you indulging me in Alias talk, because...
Dude, are you kidding? It was 5 years of my life. I'm happy to talk about it.
That's great, because it really was a great show. And I understand it. You had bumps in the road, but I think overall...
It's like a marriage. Like, I still love that experience. It was incredible, and I'm very proud of everything we did there. And, you know,
well, and to
even
your,
the mistakes.
To your credit, I think you guys upped the tempo in so many of those espionage scenes that it's so funny. I went back and on a local affiliate, they're rerunning Mission Impossible episodes. Mm-hmm. And, God, that show, when we were little kids, was such a great breakneck show. And it still is great. But now, my God, you can time that thing with, like, an hourglass. I mean, the comparison of, like, you guys are just, you know, heart-pounding, literally, the techno beat while everything is going on. Everything is split-second action and so many quick cuts. Well, my God, you know, poor Greg Morris is hunched over a safe trying to crack open something, and it takes, like, 10 minutes. And all you hear is that Lalo Schifrin, just the drums over and over again. And it just doesn't compare. And I think JJ, by the way, gave a nice shot in the arm to the Mission Impossible film franchise, because three really was great. And
it
I was so pleasantly surprised after really being disappointed with number two.
Yeah, you know, JJ's a great filmmaker. He's an incredible person and an incredible entertainer, and was so committed to making that thing special. And he brought, you know, Alex Kurtzman and Bob Orsi to write the script, who had been with Alias for many years and who are terrific guys. And, you know, I like to give them shit. I'm like, oh, you guys used every single set piece that we never could do on the show. Thank you so much for just taking everything we created for you in the room and putting it in there. Like, oh, yeah, the elevator fight that you always said, like, it's an elevator. It's too small. I don't know how to do an elevator fight and make it cool. It's like, well, I guess you figured it out finally. That's fantastic. So I couldn't have been happier and more excited to see that movie. And just, you know, I'm so, you know, just so excited for them that it was great.
Well, tell me about Jennifer Garner, because it seems like on the Alias DVD commentaries and various stories that I hear that she is pretty cool for a hot chick.
She's the coolest because she was, you know, I don't think I'm saying anything that people don't really know. She wasn't really thought of as a hot chick until Alias. She was always like, oh, it's quirky girl with glasses on the left. Or it's, oh, it's fat cousin. Or, you know.
Fat cousin, you're kidding.
She was never really that breakout sexy star. And JJ fell in love with her on Felicity. She played Scott Foley. His character, was it Noel, I think? She was Noel's girlfriend, Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
And JJ just loved her and knew that she could be great. And everybody else said he was insane. All
wow.
The executives, all the agents were like, what are you talking about, Jennifer Garner? Come on, you should get, go, you, you know, there's other people, and is she really that sexy? Is she really that hot? And Jennifer, you know, just got so into the role and so embraced it and was so grateful for the faith that JJ had in her and that she, you know, just appreciates life and acting and the ability to work as an actress in a way that a lot of actors don't. You know, Jennifer cares about her craft. She's been working at her craft for a long time and had been working at it for a long time before getting the Alias break. And it just made her appreciate it in a way that, you know, 9 out of 10 actors don't, especially young actors. They just take the experience for granted.
Wow.
And Jennifer was always incredibly, you know, cool to the crew and gracious and thoughtful and considerate, and you know, and she was put through the ringer. She's in every scene of that freaking show.
Yeah.
And you know, had to shoot all these nights and all these stunts and had to work harder than anybody did, and always did it with a smile on her face and, you know, a song in her heart, and just was caring about everybody on that crew. And you know, with Jennifer and JJ at the top of the pyramid, it just created the greatest family unit, you know, with the Alias crew and the Alias staff. You know, very often, you know, a television show is defined by the culture of a television show is defined by the people in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with JJ and Jennifer up there, it just was a special place for all of us. Everyone who worked on that show treasures that experience.
I'm noticing, too, a lot of writers, and I obviously, given the format of Word Balloon, I focus on writers, and I try to recognize names from different shows, and I'm pleased when they pop up in other places, and the show seems to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like when Drew Goddard came on Alias, it seemed like things, you know, perked up. I was thrilled when Amy Acker showed up in the first season. I thought she was great.
Amy was the greatest, and, you know, we were all in love with Amy, and she's one of those incredible people who, when you meet her, is such a goofball, you can't even believe it. She is such a goof. And then it turns on, the camera turns on, and she's the smoothest, sexiest person you've ever seen in your life. She's another one who's incredibly, you know, sweet and thoughtful and just a pleasure to work with.
That's really cool.
Unlike Drew, who's a total pain in the ass. It's like, oh, wait, could you be taller, more handsome, and have better hair? I don't understand. I'm short, fat, and bald, and I have to hang out with you all day? This is a disaster. Drew was great to work with, and, you know, we had him write an episode of Lost that first season because he was so great, and I don't think it's been announced, but he's doing something very special right now with JJ that I'm sure will be, you know.
Oh, cool.
Out there soon.
Well, and I was going to ask, are you and JJ, are you going to be able to jump in on any Star Trek stuff for JJ?
I don't know. You know, I've chatted, because I'm friends with them, I've chatted with them about the story and just, you know, I read the script at an early stage and gave them some thoughts. And I think it's an incredible take on the legend. And I'm very excited to see how it goes. And I think fans will love it. I think it gives them everything they want. I think it's true to the franchise that's existed and yet, you know, carves out a future for the franchise that feels authentic. You could not have better people caring for Star Trek.
Cool.
With, you know, JJ and Bob Orsi and Alex Kurtzman and Damon Lindelof and Brian Burke, you know, in charge of that franchise. You can't find anyone else, because they're not doing it for the money. They're doing it out of love and out of, you know, enjoyment for what they're going to do, and they just want to entertain people.
Cool. Well, let's swing it back to Heroes and tell me about the writers you're working on with there, because Jeff has been nothing but complimentary in terms of the staff and says how great of an experience it is, and that as producers, you guys can really go in and do whatever you want in terms of aspects of the show, whether it's casting or be
production. It's been really great. And, you know, the thing that, you know, all that really stems from Tim. Tim had a real great vision for how he wanted to run the show. And it really dovetailed with a lot of the things that I had seen happen on the serialized shows that I'd worked on before, which was very often you get behind and you end up having everybody write every episode as a team. But that was never had never been established as part of the culture from the beginning, and that was the different approach that Tim established at Heroes, so that, you know, the team of writers, there's like something like 10 of us or whatever, we break all the stories together in the room, and then we take, you know, we'll break 4 episodes worth of story, and then we'll each, you know, we'll split up the storylines.
Okay.
So on every episode that you watch of Heroes, regardless of the name on the episode, every single writer on the staff of the show wrote something in that episode. And it allows everyone of the writers to feel a sense of ownership of what they're doing, and to feel like they're a part of something together, and it keeps everybody on top of the narrative and the story, so that, you know, when you're trying to connect a complicated epic narrative like Heroes, it has some consistency because everyone who's working on it understands it and understands what's gone before and understands what's coming afterward. It also allows you to get things done quickly.
Okay.
So we never get behind, and that's another thing that can really screw you over writing this type of show. Is when you get behind and you have to crank something out, you might make the wrong choice. You might make a decision to go a certain way with a character before really thinking about where that was going to end up. And that was one of the problems with Alias, and very often it let the show be incredibly original because we were writing scripts and creating stuff on the fly, but it made the narrative incoherent at certain stages.
Are there any characters that grew through the writing process, as opposed to whatever the master plan was at the beginning, because
the one
of either
character that really that did absolutely was HRG, Claire's dad.
Uh-huh.
You know, was really kind of always was just sort of a throwaway in the pilot. And as we talked about Claire's story and what Tim wanted to do with Claire's story, it just became clear that we were going to need to humanize him in a way that hadn't been, you know,
initially considered
from the beginning. And then Jack Coleman is such an incredible actor and brought such a depth of emotion and moral complexity to that character that, you know, that just continued to grow. And what Jack and Hayden do together on the screen is becoming one of the emotional cores of the series.
You know, and I want to say, too, that, and I was thinking of this when we were talking about Alias, how much, in a slight way, there's a shade of Sydney in Claire. And I kind of see, just when she's vulnerable, I see a little bit of Sydney Bristow in Claire.
So, you know, a lot of that really has to do with the fact that, you know, obviously Jennifer is a great, great, incredible actress, and Hayden is as well. You know, Hayden is a superstar, and, you know, we're so lucky that she is on this show because she is just going to be, you know, in the stratosphere.
I think
and
you're right.
The way
yeah.
that she can show a depth of emotion, especially with genre material, that's something that you usually don't get in genre work, that very often people play it a little too arch and they don't play it real and they don't play it vulnerable. And, you know, Hayden can do that in the same way that Jennifer could.
When I first saw the publicity photos and I saw the cheerleader, I'm like, all right, fine. You know, whatever. I'm like, I'm sure I'll enjoy everybody else and it'll be fine. But, yeah, I mean, she really demands your attention and, to her credit, mm-hmm. really, I think, delivers. And really, you know, yeah, you can't help but root for her.
Mm-hmm.
And there really was. There was just a very genuine quality about her from the start that it's like, wow, I guess there's a lot more there than I really expected.
And yeah. And that's something that, you know.
Plus a surprise.
And it's so funny because I thought I had heard this described on your show. And I thought I'd heard Loeb do it. I can't even remember. But it was something that we really tried to keep in mind as we were, you know, crafting the storylines for Heroes, was trying to come up with a storyline for everyone who was on the couch, everyone who was watching the show. So someone might like Hayden's story and not like, you know, Matt's story, but they'll get through Matt's story to get to Hayden's story.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way that Lost can entertain such a broad audience, that was something that we really tried to do with Heroes, to make sure that, that there was something in the show for everyone watching. And I think we've done quite well with that, and I think it has, you know, been part of our mainstream success. And it's so funny because I always did think I heard someone talking about that on your show.
Yeah, well, it's it probably was with Loeb. Well, let's talk about Matt, and because I want to talk about Adrian Passer for a second. Let's talk about Matt for a second, because Greg Grunberg is a guy that obviously J.J. Abrams has had in his life, as you said in your interview, since kindergarten.
Yeah, and I met Greg right when I met J.J. and have been friends with Greg for forever. You know, Greg is, again, one of my closest friends and just the best guy ever. And the fact that we both ended up on Heroes is total coincidence.
Oh, that's cool. I love the fact that he was used in the Lost pilot, too, as the pilot, which was
great. And he's going to be in Star Trek, and I have no idea what they're going to do with him, if they're going to put him in freaking Starfleet outfit or what the hell it's going to be.
That's
awesome. I can't wait to see it.
That's funny, because, like, John Frankenheimer, I always listen. I love DVD commentaries, obviously. That's one of the reasons why I do this show. And he said that he's had some good luck charm actors and stuff that he would always use, and John Ford always had his stock actors that he would use throughout the years in films. And it's cool that J.J. always, you know, gives Greg a part.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's great because he's incredibly likable.
Yep.
You know, God, Weiss was such a great character in Alias. And only grew and only became more and more cooler as time went on. And Parkman's the same way. Parkman's awesome.
Absolutely. You know, Greg is another one of those actors who has been in this business for a long time. It's all he ever wanted to do, and he appreciates the fact that he gets paid to do it, and it just comes across in the way he portrays any character, that he has such a genuine love for what he's doing that is infectious, and the audience can pick up on stuff like that, and they just can't help but fall in love with Greg.
Well, Adrian Passer was a favorite of mine on that short-lived Fox show, Prophet.
Yep.
I mean, that was such a cool show, and it was ahead of its time in a lot of ways, like your show, an overarching storyline supported by each week's episode and everything. But really, there was definitely a plan there.
Yep.
And I'm so glad that he was able to hook up with you guys and is a great, he's a great good guy, bad guy. We're not really sure which way he's going to turn.
Yeah,
that's part
the
of the
best
fun.
And he's an amazing guy. And we do tease him about Prophet because, of course, it always comes up. And, the damn show was on the air, for only three times or something. they showed so few of those. Prophet, this great show. It's like, dude, it was barely on.
But it was. It was. Well, and it's funny.
It touched a lot of people because it was so bold.
Yes, and critics.
There was nothing else like it, and it really just seared itself into the memories of so many people.
I bought the DVD set. I mean, that's the thing, because I remember watching it, and as soon as I think Trio ran it before Trio went off the air. And I was
I have no idea. Did they even make more than four?
Yeah, there's.
Are you sure?
There's
positive? How many do you positively know you've seen?
I have nine, so I know that
okay.
to be true. But no, I enjoy Nathan's character. I think
it's great. Nathan's an amazing foil for Peter. And,
certainly,
and I think the journey that we take those brothers on this year will feel organic and satisfying. The conclusion that we bring them to at the end of the year, I think, is going to blow people away.
Cool.
It's very emotional as we like to be on this show, and yet cataclysmic in scope. Adrian's an amazing actor, and such a pleasure to work with a guy like that. People want to track down spoilers. They'll still watch the show.
Oh, yeah. No, and I realize. Yeah, you're right. And it's.
And that was something we discovered on Alias. We were so anal about secrecy in the beginning, about keeping everything under wraps. And we just realized, why are we beating ourselves up about this stuff? It's, people love it. They're so into it. And we started, releasing script pages in secret and putting stuff on the boards to really kind of play into the spoiler community of it all. And, I love that stuff.
That's awesome. Well, let's talk about things we can talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier just some of the great cameos that you've had on this season and everything. And, we didn't even talk about Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, he is awesome in my episode where people will see him killed.
Wow.
On Monday night.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's great. Well, and again, this airs afterwards, so that kind of thing we can't spoil.
I gave it away.
There you go. I loved his whole little backstory, and we don't know how old Enderman could have been.
Absolutely. That's a very good point, how old he would have been.
Yeah, because, it's, there was a time when we all kind of followed the rules, and it was
a
golden
really
age.
And, you hear George Takei say something like that in my episode as well, and it really alludes to this history that all those, specials, those people with powers have with each other. and that's a huge part of next year's storyline.
I was wondering.
I don't think that's giving anything away.
Okay.
It's already been out there, is that next year's volume will be called Generations, and so much of it is going to be that, the sins of the fathers are visited upon the sons. our past is caught up with us. It's going to have that energy to it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. As soon as McDowell said that, immediately it's like, okay, are we talking about ancient times? Are we talking about the 30s? I mean, certainly comic book fans are probably like, was there a Justice Society version of these guys? That kind of thing.
There'll be it's something like that. We haven't exactly, settled on what time. It's like, we're like, is it the 90s? Is it the 80s? Is it the 70s? Like, what do we want to go see?
Sure.
So we're still playing with that a little bit.
Cool.
But, we know what they all did together, and, we know who they were, and we know what their relationships were. We're just trying to figure out, what do we want to see, actually, if we ever did something like that? What version of that would we want to see? But Malcolm was such a pleasure to work with, and, again, that, dude, Time After Time was
Hell
one
yeah.
of my favorite movies
oh
as a kid.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I freaking loved that. And, Malcolm McDowell is an action hero in that movie. Made me feel like I could be an action hero. So to be working with that guy was such a pleasure, and he's super fun, and just tells crazy stories like, "Oh, Helen Mirren's on that magazine. Last time I saw her, I was chasing her naked through a field at Stratford and Avon." I was like, "Wait, was this for a movie?" He's like, "No, man, I just wanted to screw her." And you're like, "Jesus, oh my God. Did you hear that?" He just riffs on those great stories. Such a character.
That's awesome.
And, someone like that, he's been doing this a lot. He loves working. He elevates your material.
Absolutely.
So much more than it deserves to be. It's just a pleasure.
No, you're right. And that's, it's the same thing when they had Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart in X-Men. And
totally.
And I had, hardcore acting friends who, would never think of, looking at a movie or a comic book and stuff. And I'm like, you got to watch because, as you just said, it elevates the material. And all of a sudden, they're having as much of a fight as Titus and any Shakespearean character you want to throw out there. And it's
absolutely.
It is. It's there again. It's the gravitas that they bring that
absolutely.
Elevates the material. That's great, man.
Yeah.
Will we see, and I don't want to give anything away, but, you've had some people that have made their cameos. Certainly, Christopher Eccleston was a great character. Will we see guys like that? People that we saw this year that weren't regulars, will they pop up next year?
I think that's probably safe to imagine, especially when they were incredibly awesome, Christopher Eccleston. He just kicks so much ass and such a pleasure to work with, and we would be lucky to have the opportunity to work with him again.
That's
and
cool.
That character obviously plays, the character of Claude plays heavily into the mythology of the show.
Okay. Jeff teased that there's a pending writer's strike, and I don't know where, after or whatever, where things stand right now, or actually with the Writers Guild, if have things been settled, or is that still pending?
That's still pending.
Okay.
I'm sort of an optimist, but often wrong. Like, I'm the guy like, there's not going to be a Gulf War. Saddam's not crazy. I'm that guy. So I don't think there's going to be a writer's strike. I'm very optimistic about it, mainly because the writers are such an incredibly weak union, and we all always bend over and cave, but also because what makes more sense for the writers to do is to wait until the directors need to walk out, which is at the beginning of next year.
Okay.
And that will allow everyone to complete their season's worth of scripts.
So the beginning of 2008 or the beginning of the 2008 season?
Yeah, beginning of 2008 calendar year.
Okay.
I think is when the DGA contract expires.
Okay.
So, whatever. They're up in arms about this stuff, but it's so beyond my control, and it's so the last thing I want to talk about. I'm not saying not with you, but with Jeff when he's like, "Let's talk about the guild." It's like, dude, shut up. We got to break story. I think I'm optimistic it's all going to work out for everybody, just because we all have mortgages and want to make TV and also want to keep everybody working and keep everybody entertained.
It seems like cable and British television kind of has a better handle on how to break up seasons, because certainly in England, God, you know, a season could be 6 or 8 episodes over there. And here, at least with cable, you got 13 episodes and then a break. And it's funny because, as you mentioned with Lost, they're going to 16 episodes. You saw with Alias, 24 and Lost, not starting until January,
right,
to kind of, like, allow the story to happen. Do you think eventually, just your opinion, that TV is kind of moving towards that, you know, less episodes for
a season?
I don't.
I actually think it's working towards the opposite.
Really?
And that, you know, again, pending the announcement that's made at Upfronts on Monday,
okay,
my comments will be clearer.
I see.
But, you know, there, and this was something that we faced on Lost, which was so ironic, you know, when in its very early days, the last thing the new regime at that network wanted was Lost on the air, for them to then come at the end of the successful show and say, okay, we want, you know, twice as many episodes. We want to run round the, you know, year round. That would be the model that they could have if it was humanly possible.
Okay.
Was for a show to be on, you know, year round. It is impossible, certainly with a show that has the scope and the scale of Heroes. We have, you know, 3 crews working, you know, sometimes, you know, 7 days a week to try and get a show of this scope done and delivered on time.
Sure.
When you try to tell the network, let's just start them all in January and then run them. No, we need you in the fall because you're the only thing we have and we're desperate to sell advertising. So hopefully we will take one break at Christmas, you know, which is a very natural break that I think audiences are comfortable with because, you know, everybody has to suffer through family vacations and Christmas hell. So sometimes their shows are unavailable to them. They're used to that. But the thing that really slaughtered us this year was that, you know, second time we were off the air after episode 19.
Yes.
Was a catastrophe. And, you know, that's something that we won't repeat. And, you know, that's why they're making, you know, with Lost, there'll be 16 episodes. They'll air, you know, they'll start airing them in January and they'll run 16 through.
Right.
But, you know,
okay,
doing anything less than that, you know, also the economic models that we have, it's better the more episodes there are as opposed to the fewer episodes there are because then they can amortize the expense of everything and it's all that
back-end, you know, stuff,
insane production accounting that no one understands but one,
okay,
kind of gnomish person somewhere.
It almost seems to me that especially with newer shows, if, you know, you had fewer episodes and really, like, did, as you guys are now doing, one story per season, you might have a better chance of,
but that's,
know,
the thing is, though, you would think that, but it actually isn't for a couple reasons. One, once you get people watching and they're hooked, you want to keep them there.
True.
And two, if you did something like that was 6 episodes and really popped, you would have to go through all the energy of bringing back those assets to make the show again and re-market the show and reintroduce the show in the media space because, you know, marketing obviously is such another tremendous expense. And to have to, you know, relaunch a show multiple times is impossible financially and, you know, for a network and
I hear you.
The space is just too crowded. So,
okay,
you know, potentially I think there's space for more miniseries type content. But, you know, I don't think, you know, real shows will be, certainly on a network will ever be.
And
that
then,
said, direct your attention to the announcement at the Upfronts on Monday, potentially.
And as we wrap up, because I see that we're at an hour and you've been very generous with your time, man.
I'm happy to keep talking. I love talking about myself. not usually, but.
No, you're good, man.
You're very psychologically manipulative, and you do your homework, and you're so great at just making people talk.
You're very kind. I just want to know from a comic standpoint. So beyond Jeff's stuff, what do you read? What do you like? And you know, and also,
you know,
what
I
you'd
love,
like to write sometime.
What's that?
What you might be interested in writing down the line?
Well, you know, as a kid, it's all about Batman. For me, it was Batman was the shit.
Cool.
You know, Neil Adams Batman.
I'm with
you. Marshall Rogers, that stuff was the greatest.
Yeah, that's a shame that, and we should acknowledge that Marshall passed away recently.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah, I had Englehart on the show.
Really?
And talked about those great arcs as well. But
yeah,
that was a regret that I wasn't able to talk to Marshall before he passed.
And that, you know, absolutely. And that is the stuff that, you know, really hooked me on, you know, comics and you know, really directed me towards, you know, taking genre storytelling seriously, because I did so connect with that Batman character emotionally, that it just, you know, transformed me and transformed my life in the way I thought about what I wanted to do and what kind of stories I wanted to tell. And then, you know, obviously the next thing, it just blew the top of my head off, was, you know, Claremont's X-Men and John Byrne's X-Men. Like, that whole, you know, run that I was very lucky to be in a situation where I didn't read them as they came out, and then went to boarding school, and there was a guy down the hall who had his walls covered with these comics, and I was like, what are these? You know? And he just started giving them to me, and I was addicted and just fell in love with the X-Men. And, you know, again, that type of storytelling that we try to emulate here, that for me, I really think started with Stan Lee, and when he took those, you know, those extraordinary characters and gave them ordinary problems and ordinary relationships and made them so relatable, that was something that, you know, was very transformative. You know, you see it again with, you know, something like Runaways, which is something that I think has been terrific. Brian Vaughn's Runaways I think is great.
You bet.
And, I do tend to follow writers very often. You know, I follow, you know, Rucka's work. I follow,
cool.
I love the Astro City stuff.
Yes, Busick's fantastic.
Yeah, Busick's awesome. Obviously, Loeb, you know, I'm in love with.
Do you know all of Loeb's guys at the Magic Treehouse?
You know, I have. I've met Jeff Johns once. I met him
okay.
once at Alias, and dude, Heinberg's writing is awesome.
Yeah, and you know, I do not want to watch Grey's Anatomy, but I have to because Alan is hilarious,
yeah.
And it comes through, and that's the thing. I find myself watching just because I like Alan so much, and you can't help it. It's a funny show.
Yeah.
Amongst the papers.
Yeah, I don't care. Is that another show? It's on another network? It's somebody else? Wait, I thought we were talking about me.
Well, it's not. Yeah,
no, let's talk about Grey's Anatomy more. That's a great idea. Yeah. That's a show that gets 20 million viewers, twice as many as we do, and all they do is a freaking medical show. I don't understand.
And they got that hottie, Katherine Heigl, for God's
sake.
She
is very hot.
Jesus.
JJ actually worked on a movie that she was in called My Father the Hero.
Oh, my God, I forgot that was her.
Uncredited polish with that.
With Gerard Depardieu.
Depardieu, yeah, back in the day.
I totally forgot that was her. Oh, my God.
Totally.
Now, you and Jeff are obvious comic fans. How many of the other writers are? Because I know
Joe Pekaski and Aaron Colite, who are here, are hardcore fans as well.
Cool. And they do a little contribution to comic book resources, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Very
cool. You know, and that is one of the great things about the show, is that, you know, at the end of the day, the big secret is we would all do this for free. You know, this is our fun. It's our playtime. It's stuff that we love. And, you know, being able to write these kinds of stories is incredible. You know, we have, you know, this episode 20 that was on this year, which was kind of our homage to Days of Future Past.
Yes.
You know, we're incredibly, you know, proud that we got to do something like that on network television and, you know, take an idea that we thought that we had loved and kind of crafted into our own version of something, you know, we're all excited about.
You know, I didn't even mention the dynamic between Hero and Ando and how great that is. And I didn't, I think, with Jeff either. And really, they are the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of this, you know, ensemble that it is so great to, or Jake and, or Jay and Silent Bob for
absolutely
for fanboys. Everything.
Yeah.
But
the stuff that, you know, James Kyson Lee's done, you know, with Mossy has been amazing. And, you know, they're so perfect together. And I don't think Mossy would have popped in the way that he has without James playing a straight man.
Absolutely.
They're solid. And, you know, that was another thing. Mossy won a Saturn Award last night for Best Actor. So that was
that's terrific.
As well.
Oh, that's excellent. No,
yep.
You know, they are. They're absolutely, I think they're the ones that, for the rest of my family that aren't as into comic books, I think it was Hero and Ando that really sucked them in. And they're like, those guys are hilarious. I want to watch those guys.
Absolutely.
So that's great. And I loved their, of course, you know, the fact that Hero always makes the comic references and stuff, like with time travel. And he talked about, I forget which specific X-Men issue it was that.
Yep, and we screwed that up totally.
Oh.
We got the wrong one. We got the one, like the next one, where it's Kitty with the Brood at Christmas or whatever the hell that crazy episode was. We totally blew that one out of the gate.
Don't sweat it, man. I'm more of a Legion fan than I am an X-Men fan.
Oh, really?
So there you go. Yeah, you see? As I was just telling Johns the other day, I'm like, yeah, you know, I think I was like the last generation that made the choice of Legion or X-Men, and I chose the Legion. So
you were the one.
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
I am the one. It's
so
true.
Glad for you.
You know, and then, yeah, so I have no idea who Arsenal and all these other, like, you know, two-bit X-Men are that, you know,
right.
I know the frontline guys, but, yeah, beyond that, it's like
right.
I've never heard of him.
And, then, you know, just back to comics again, like Bendis is someone whose work I just couldn't believe. And, you know, I was in – there's a comic book shop that I in L.A. called Meltdown that I go to, you know, that I love. And Gaston, the guy who runs it, is the best. And I just was in there and years ago and picked up this thing called Goldfish and started flipping through it and was just like, what the hell is this? Oh, my God, this guy's a genius. And I've just been such a fan ever since.
That's cool.
You know, Mark Miller as well is the greatest. Wanted, I thought, was one of the best things I'd read in years. I was so blown away by that book.
Are you going to be in any cons?
Yeah. We're going to be at, you know, Comic-Con in San Diego, of
Certainly.
Course.
Very cool.
You know, we were there last year. And,
yes,
you know,
indeed.
Again, that was right when I, you know, the first day I came onto this show, I said, okay, what have we got planned for Comic-Con? You know, and Aaron and Joe were like, we're so glad you said that. We've been trying to get him excited about that ever since we were, you know, got started. And, you know, we took the show to Comic-Con and really used that as our rallying point to build our, you know, core audience.
Yes.
And so this year we want to say a thank you to that crowd. And we're doing a really big presence. And we have a lot of great, you know, kind of giveaways and promotions and contests and stuff that, you know, we're trying to do in a way that, you know, very authentically, you know, thanks that crowd.
Well, and that's cool because look at Snakes on the Plane that I think had the same kind of internet buzz behind it. And luckily, as opposed to Snakes on the Plane, I think you guys, the product proved itself because of the quality and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really congratulate everyone on the internet marketing because I think it was probably the most successful pre-marketing that I've seen as far as any television show.
Thank you very much for saying that because it's something that we really, you know, we poured our hearts into. We drove them towards it, you know, when I say them, like, you know, marketing at NBC, and we did a lot of stuff on our own because we felt so strongly about it, and we felt strongly about it as fans. Like, we were like, if people see this, they're going to be excited, and they're going to want to talk about it. So we created this very first site that we had, Ninth Wonders, which was our very first kind of board that we had.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, John Rochelle did the design for it, and JG does a lot of work for Comic Craft. He does a lot of amazing graphic design for comics and does a lot of lettering that everybody's familiar with, and he's just a genius. And he did a beautiful page for us for ninthwonders.com.
Will there be a new comic book artist for season two? Because
there's tons. And we had, obviously through Loeb, he's hooked us up with the greatest, you know.
Sure.
Michael Turner did our first, you know, first online comic, and we've had amazing guys all year.
You mentioned Gatos, and of course, I was wondering more on screen in terms, and I do want to acknowledge the internet people as well, but Tim Sale, you know, you know, whose work really was Isaac's work, and now that Isaac is gone.
Yes, but Peter has Isaac's power.
Ah, there you go. So so he has
so
Tim Sale's power.
If Peter were to survive, potentially Tim Sale would still be employed.
Okay, that's cool. Well, and I almost wondered, with it being a different power, if you'd go to a different artist or somebody.
Well, it is with Siler. And,
cool.
And
who's the artist for Siler? Because we've seen that already.
He's the greatest, and I can't, you know, I love him so much.
Give me books, and we'll probably be able to
figure. I can't remember his name, and I'm so embarrassed.
Do you know any books that he does or no?
It's not Michael Gatos. It's another guy who does really kind of.
It looked crazy. Almost Ben Temple Smithy, but no.
No, it's like he did do a Daredevil run. Or,
oh, is it? It's not Sienkiewicz. Oh,
no,
is it Mike?
I love.
Mike?
I have an Electro Assassin Sienkiewicz page. It is like my prized possession.
Is it
like
Michael?
If my house was falling apart and my kids were like, "Help me, help me!" I'd grab my Electro page and run.
Is it Michael Lark?
No.
Okay.
Is it
Maliv? Is it
Yes, thank God. It's Alex Maliv.
Alex Maliv, he's wonderful. Yes. He's been working with Bendis on Daredevil.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He's great.
Very cool.
And, you know, we hooked up with Nancy Quesada, who has a company called Invisible Ink, and she's the one who got us in bed with, you know, Gatos and a bunch of other amazing guys. And, you know, we have a, you know, tremendous, you know, collection of artists who've contributed to the Heroes pantheon now. And, you know, I'm so excited about seeing all that stuff in a collection and seeing all that stuff published because I think people are going to be blown away by it.
That's cool. And for Word Balloon fans, Gatos and Maliv, I've approached them both, and they are genuinely great guys. but have very graciously said, you know, I just don't like audio interviews.
Right.
Oh, no offense. And they're like, I like you, but, you know, no.
Right.
And I'm like,
I like you, but no.
But no. And I'm like, all right, fine. It's cool. Them and Brian Wood. Brian Wood is, have you read DMZ, any of that stuff?
I have. I love DMZ. And, you know, because of, you know, my schedule, I usually read stuff in trade. So I've
That's
read
cool.
the last two trades of DMZ, which have been great.
You bet.
And I do still buy some monthlies, like Michael Aja, is that his name? David Aja, who does Iron Fist.
Oh, sure. Oh, God.
That guy's awesome.
Yes.
Like, the way he draws Hydra
oh my.
Is the greatest. I'm like, oh, this is incredible.
And I love that Iron Fist from the 20s that they've created.
Yeah, yeah.
That Brubaker and
and who's the artist for that? It's like Travel Foreman, I think.
Yes.
I just got this Iron Fist in front of me.
Yeah, so
I
do
I,
actually.
I go to Meltdown yesterday, so... Aaron grabbed it for me. Yeah, and Matt Fraction I loved on your show, you know.
Well, Matt's nuts.
He's terrific.
Yeah, and I'm talking to Brubaker on Tuesday.
Oh, that's great.
So there you go, man. Dude, thanks so much because
oh, anytime. I'm so honored to be included.
It's truly my pleasure, and I swear to God, when Lope said that you're a fan, it knocked me out of my chair because I'm telling you, I've been a fan since Alias.
Oh, thank you so much.
And love Lost and really love what you guys are doing on Heroes. Let's absolutely talk when things wrap up
I'd
in a couple
to.
Of weeks.
And if you're ever out here, you got to give us a call, and Loeb and I can walk you around the set
oh, that'd be...
and meet Aaron and Joe and Tim and hang out and
that'd
check
be
it
awesome.
All out. And are you going to be in San Diego?
Likely, yes. I should be there at least 3 days. I'm I'm hoping to be there. You know, I'm not sure if I'm going to either do Thursday through Saturday or Friday through Sunday.
Okay.
But,
well, I think our big... deal is on Saturday.
Cool. Okay.
So you got to come by and hang out.
Oh, it'd be my pleasure.
We'll hook you up with some of the special giveaways.
Thank
you. The Heroes Lunchbox, the Ninth Wonders Lunchbox.
Cool.
That, John Rochelle is designing right now.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
No, man. Jesse, thanks a lot for talking.
Anytime, John.
That's Jesse Alexander, the co-executive producer of NBC's Heroes. Don't forget, the season wraps up on May 21st. And make sure to look for Jesse and the guys from Heroes at San Diego Comic-Con. And, of course, coming in the fall, Heroes Season 2 and the spin-off series, Heroes Origins. Word Balloon is brought to you by MailOrderComics.com. Today's comics at yesterday's prices. If you liked them before, check them out today. They've got all new 75% discounts on your pre-ordered new releases and more 50% discounts than ever before. That coupled with their unmatched ordering system and the best customer service to be found yet. Mail Order Comics wants to be your subscription service for all your comic book and related items. Every month you'll enjoy standard discounts of 38% on large press and up to 38% on all small press publishers. They've added double the specials with discounts of 50% and more. That's right, twice as many DC, Image, and Marvel monthly specials. For all the details, go to mailordercomics.com. Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntris. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet at newsarama.com. We're at iTunes, Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, Odeo, all the various podcatching sites. You can also find us at myspace.com/wordballoon, comicspace.com/wordballoon. There's our Libsyn feed as well. Any type of reviews or criticisms you'd like to make on the show, you can always email me, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.